Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
Okay.
We're going to try to pack in as much science as we can quickly. And that means three studies on primates at the top here in 3 minutes.
Let's go.
Most of you out there listening will have hopefully heard our long interview with a guy named Edwin van Leeuwen about his research in Zambia. We went over to the Netherlands to talk to him about chimpanzees. Trying to learn from a human how to use a chimpanzee vending machine and then teach others.
Complex tasks. Can they do it?
Yeah. And the whole purpose of talking about those kinds of things is to figure out what differentiates us from our closest relatives, what makes us human. At the end of the day, you can watch that video on YouTube, How to Figure Out Humanity by Teaching Chimpanzees to Use Vending Machines. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go from Zambia, that's where that research was, over to Namibia. Mm-hmm. That's where researchers took a look at baboons and did a very common experiment known as the mirror experiment. Does this animal recognize itself in the mirror?
Yeah.
Like we humans do. And like
a baboon looks at the mirror. Does it recognize that's me?
In the mirror.
Okay.
Right. A lot of animals can do this. Can baboons? No.
Can't do it.
The way you do
and
this.
How do you determine that?
Yeah. You put something on their body that they would recognize as not supposed to be there. So what they did is first they shone a laser. They use lasers on baboons, like on their foot or on their hand. So the baboons looks at
it. And then they get out of that. Get out of that laser.
I would do the same thing. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'd try to scratch it off. What is that? Right?
Yeah.
Now they put them in front of a mirror and have a laser shining on a part of their body that they can't see.
So they're looking at the mirror image with this laser on their head. Do they then scratch their own head?
No. Because they don't recognize that as being them. They think it's a stranger.
Huh.
And so they don't begin scratching their head to try to get the laser off. Therefore, establishing baboons do not recognize themselves in the mirrors. They have failed the mirror test.
All right, next.
Next. Over to Uganda.
Uganda.
Chimpanzees, bonobos, we're going to stick to those primates. They recognize hand signals from each other. So they might sound like they're making a lot of grunts, but there are upwards of 80 signals that they can give with their hands or with their bodies that indicate things. And amazingly, we humans can recognize quite a few
sign
of them.
Sign language.
Sign language, yeah. So I'm going to stroke my inner bicep here, Gabe,
okay,
just like that.
Sure.
Just like a chimpanzee, stroking my inner bicep.
Yeah.
What that means is, Gabe, can you groom me? And the other chimpanzee would recognize that. You would go over and maybe start grooming, pulling things out of my hair, sticks, twigs, leaves,
lice.
Insects,
lice.
Okay. Bonobos. Gabe, if you were eating something right now and I put my hand over your mouth, that means give me some of that stuff too. So I'm going to do that to you today at lunch.
Yeah.
If I want some of your food, I'm going to put my hand over your chewing mouth. And both bonobos and chimpanzees, if they shake something really hard, you know what that means? Let's have sex. Probably. It usually means let's have sex if they shake something. So what's new is that researchers in Uganda saw a mother and daughter establish a new signal that is idiosyncratic. It's unique to them and only them. No other chimpanzee does this. And the daughter, her name is Lindsay, puts her hand over the eye of her mom, Beryl. And she started doing this at the age of 3.5. That means, mom, I want to piggyback you.
Okay.
And it took, at the age of 3.5, mom didn't recognize that. By 4.5, she knows. Anytime Lindsay puts her hand over my eye, she wants a piggyback ride.
So they are constantly learning new words, new ways to communicate.
It's like how we humans invented
a new handshake symbols.
A new handshake, you know? Clip, right. Clap, clip, backwards, slap the back, all that kind of stuff. Last one. We all know that yawning is contagious.
Yeah.
The question is urination, peeing, is that contagious? These were researchers in Japan. They had about 20 chimpanzees.
Right when you said that, I realized that I have to go.
They had 20 chimpanzees in a sanctuary in Japan, and they looked at 600 hours of tape to confirm something that they thought they were seeing, that in certain circumstances, urination seemed contagious. So what they figured out is that's true, and it depends on two things. Proximity, how close am I to the urinator? And the further away I get, the less likely it is that I'm going to also contagiously urinate,
mm-hmm.
start urinating. And the other thing was social hierarchy does play a role. So if you're strong in the group, Gabe, and you begin relieving yourself.
My role model is peeing. Why don't I do it too?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sure. So I think this is interesting because most of the people listening right now are probably familiar with social settings like being at a bar or at a party where someone gets up, usually a bar. It'd be like a bar restaurant. They get up to go use the restroom and then, oh, I'll go with you.
So it's not just to accompany that person. It's because all of a sudden that person realizes that they have to go too. Just like what happened to me just now when you mentioned this.
Or it's social hierarchy. Maybe when the more powerful, more dominant part of this group says, I have to go, you know, break the seal. I'm more likely to go if I'm lower on the rung. In the wild, there are good reasons for doing this. You can be less... If you have predators, it's less likely that they can find you. If you all pee in the same spot, anyone who's ever gone on a road trip knows that before you leave, it's a good idea for everyone to go. There are certain situations, and we humans seem to have moved more away from this. Most guys, for example, don't like peeing next to each other in urinals.
No, it depends.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it still happens with chimpanzees. It probably still, to some extent, happens with us humans, and just be aware of that.
A bit more serious now is what having depressive symptoms could that what effect that could have on what party you vote for, the political party you vote for. And the reason why I like this study is that it was there were complete open questions. The researchers didn't say why they think this happened, simply just this happened. Just the fact that this happened. And they were looking in Britain, the Netherlands, and Spain. So surveys in those three countries asking people what party you feel closest to, what party you are going to vote for if there were an election right now, what party you would vote for, and are you suffering from depressive symptoms? And those were, are you sad? Are you down? How are you sleeping? What's your energy level? And if you're suffering from depressive symptoms, it's just a simple fact, according to this research, that you are more likely to vote for a different party than the one you feel closest to.
And wait, so you, no matter where your baseline is, party A, B, C, D, E, F, G, if I'm D, or if I'm B, and then I'm suffering depressive symptoms, I will go away from that party and vote for a party similar to it, but not the same?
A different party, that's it. A different party. And it's statistically significant. So up to 23 percentage points of probability to defect from that party that you feel closest to, that if there were election right now, you would vote for a different party. Now, like I said at the beginning, there are open questions. They didn't look into why. It's just the fact that it will happen. If you are suffering from depression, the likelihood that you will vote for a different party at the next election is simply higher.
There's some intuitive logic there, right? If I'm in an organization and I'm frustrated with, or sorry, no, not even frustrated. The leadership is there. They're doing a good job, a bad job, or right in the middle. Doesn't matter. And yet I feel down. Then I would attach possibly those feelings to that leadership and hence turn and look for different leadership.
Why not? That's the phenomenon of defection, to defect, to go away from something that you generally feel loyal to.
It's just a really powerful word to use politically, like voting.
Yeah.
Oh, are you voting for? No, I actually defected.
Yeah.
I'm defecting this time.
Well, I mean, it is a very, very important topic because think about in Germany right now, according to the major insurers, they do a health atlas every year. And right now, 12.5% of Germans are suffering from depression, clinical depression. And there's a big time election coming up at the end of this month. What will that mean? If 12.5% of voters, if all those ones who are suffering from depression go out and vote, which is a completely different question that has been looked into, what does depression do to voter turnout? What effect will that have?
Yeah. Yeah. At the very least, based on this study, the higher the national level of depression, the higher number of people are likely to vote for a non-mainstream. Well, I can't
a
even say that.
Party.
A different.
A
yeah,
different
a, just party. A different. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that we'll limit it to that because that's what the paper says. I'll move on to something else here. Gabe, have you heard anyone say this? This seems like a pretty new thing to be saying.
Yeah.
And I've heard it. I've seen it a lot on the internet, more on the internet than I've heard it. Somebody talking about getting the ick. Yeah, the ick. Have you heard someone say that?
Not that exact word. But that emotion or that feeling, you have.
Yeah.
Ugh.
This is a sudden and visceral aversion to a romantic partner. That's how it's being used.
Okay. So referring to the person that they're going out with or the person that they're close to right now or in a relationship with.
Ugh. Yeah. Or not even necessarily with. They might be thinking about that. I was thinking about getting together with him and then, I don't know, I just kind of got, I got the ick. That's how you use it. That's how I've heard it. That's how I've seen it online. And it is it feels relatively new. It's a new way to describe something that we all kind of intuitively understand. But what is it exactly? What is it? And that's what this study is about.
What is it?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to get to, man.
Come on, man.
Well, first of all, I'm going to debunk what I said 2 seconds ago about it being new. I thought it was new. It's not new. The authors of the paper have a couple of examples right in the top to make it clear this has been happening since the mid-1990s. And that confirms, I went to Google Ngram because I was like, when did people start saying ick like that? I'll give you this graph, Gabe.
To me, to be fair, Connor, the mid-90s feels like yesterday, so.
It was not. That graph makes it clear. It happened in the mid-90s.
And then it just went straight up. So this is a graph. There are a couple of little uptakes between 1880 and 1980, but then in the mid-90s, yeah. Boom, goes straight up.
Yeah, and there was one, they have quite a few examples. One in particular, I think, may have caused that. It was an episode the study is from just outside of Los Angeles, California, in the United States. So a lot of the cultural references here are from the U.S., but they are international as well.
Yeah.
From the TV show Friends.
I'll be there for you.
It did include that song, yeah. And so there was one episode in season one called The One with the Ick Factor. And this is where Monica, one of the characters in the show, she hooks up with a guy and they're laying in bed after doing the deed. And he's got this hairy chest and he looks like he's an older guy. And he goes on to tell her that he's a senior, but not at university. He's a senior in high school. And this gives her the ick. This is like, what have I done? She's instantly, viscerally disgusted by him. This fact. It doesn't matter. She liked him before. She hooked up with him.
Possibly because if he's in high school, this might be statutory rape?
The show doesn't frame it that way, but yes, obviously. But yeah. She's more disgusted with this fact. It revolts her. So she's turned off. It's done. There's another example they give. I wish I could play this for you, but it would be against copyright. Jerry Seinfeld in the TV show Seinfeld. He goes on a date with a woman. Every time they cut away from her and her hands reach to do something, they've clearly used a male actor who does a lot of work. He's got those really thick.
I know the term for this, man hands.
Man, yeah, that was the show. And so she breaks some bread for him, and you see these man hands. She gets an eyelash off his cheek and these gigantic man hands. And so Jerry Seinfeld developed the ick. Apparently there was Sex in the City, a show I didn't watch, but Carrie at one point hooks up with a guy, and then afterwards he writes and plays a love song for her. She gets the ick. These are all, this is the ick. This is what we're discussing today. But again, they're all like, to get more concretely in line with what people, the way people use it today, the researchers did two things. First of all, they went to TikTok and they looked for the hashtag the ick. They looked for the easiest way to find out who's talking about this and what are they saying. And so they looked at 84 videos. It's not too many videos, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But more than 3 million views. So these videos have been seen quite a lot. And then they went through and they categorically listed, what are they talking about when they talk about the ick? And it was very different for women and men. I'll go through the list that they compiled. For women, the highest percentage the one that was most frequent for when they got the ick from a guy was when he laid his head on my shoulder.
Huh.
That was called gender incongruent. They didn't think it was manly, and they got the ick.
Wow.
Or did this traditional idea of what men are supposed to do.
I do that all the time.
Number two, maybe you do this too, Gabe, Shazamming a song while he was in a nightclub. So he hears a cool song, pulls out his phone, tries to figure out which song it is. That gave quite a few women the ick, which surprised. I was like, I could see myself doing that. That'd be something I would do.
Well, yeah, as a natural-born journalist to figure things out.
A natural-born journalist. Number three on the list, saying, wow, without me, whenever I would tell him that I did anything.
Oh, got it.
Right? Pretty annoying. Next one on the list was he wore jorts.
I don't know what those
are. I like the word. He wore jorts, which is a fashion faux pas.
Jean shorts?
Jean shorts.
Okay, got it.
That gave him the ick. He loudly shushed another girl, and that's a clear sign of misogynism. Right? That one gave like a small sign that, ugh, something, just that little action, something's really wrong. The last one I'll mention, because Gabe, I think you should be aware of this.
Uh-oh.
Seeing his butt crack when he bent over gave them the ick. So watch out for that, because I've seen yours quite a bit. It doesn't give me the ick, for the future.
Oh,
now, men, when did men get the ick? When they've discovered that the person they were into or possibly dating was into astrology. To be clear, we're not talking astronomy. Astronomy is celestial objects as a science. Astrology is when you believe that stars that are light years away are affecting my mood and my prospects on luck. That's astrology. Guys are not into that. It gives them the ick.
Horoscopes and stuff like that.
Yeah. Another one. I thought this was unfair. Two of them were unfair. Girls tripping. Like, I think physically tripping, falling down. That gave them the ick.
Huh.
And another one, totally unfair. Her feet didn't reach the floor. Physical appearance. So I think she's shorter.
She's too short.
Yeah. I thought both of those were awful.
That's ick.
Yeah. That's ick to be feeling that way. When women use weird slang, or when she spits her gum in the trash like a guy, or adds cringy captions on her Instagram pictures, or wears too much makeup or fake tanner. Those gave guys the ick. So
now we know, Connor. Now we know.
No. Those are the actions that kind of lead to it. And then I'll just go through this quickly. Part two was about, okay, but who's feeling that? Because not everyone feels that the same way. Who is it that gets the ick?
Yeah.
There they went to surveys, 75 men, 50 women in the surveys. First of all, women are more likely to have experienced the ick. And that substantiates something that I felt. It felt like I was hearing it more from women. It was at a rate of 75% to 57%. Then what they did, and this was the most interesting part of the whole study, is they took that list that I just told you about of the things that give you the ick.
Mm-hmm.
And then they asked people, do you, on a scale of 1 to 5, do you feel that based on you see a guy's butt crack?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a 1, not very ick, or is it a 5, like total ick, right? Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, there's a connection between the extent to which you feel that ick and your levels of disgust, narcissism, and perfectionism. The more...
What kinds of people based on personality? Okay.
Yes. The more you tend to feel disgust normally in day-to-day activities, the more you're going to feel this and at a higher rate. The same is true if you're a perfectionist, but this here they're saying perfectionism toward others, that you expect perfection.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. Obviously, they're going to be more grossed out or disgusted when they see this happening. Also true with narcissism, but not at the same frequency. There are some people who are going to experience this a lot more, and it limits their romantic possibilities. That's one of the chief findings. It may make it more difficult to find a mate, and it may, I'm quoting them, also lead to overly rigid rejection standards, and it may be connected to narcissism as well. It may be that if you're feeling this all the time, there's some stuff that you need to work on with yourself as you continue to, I don't know, navigate the dating scene. If you're interested in this study, it's very readable, very interesting, just published in the May Personality and Individual Differences Journal. It's called The Ick, Disgust, Sensitivity, Narcissism, and Perfectionism in Mate Choice Thresholds.
And maybe it gives you, Connor Dillon, some things to think about as to ways to better yourself. If my butt crack gives you the ick.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
Okay.
So that I think, and it brings me joy, actually, if I can say that. It's a sign that the world is still a funny place and funny things happen. It's the opposite, Gabe. It's the opposite. What gives all of you the ick? I would find that interesting. It's, again, an evolving definition. But finally, that's what the study does. Gives us something to work with. Is there anything on this list you think is unfair or that you agree with, disagree with? Let us know.
SU@DW.com is our email.
Okay, so I'm back. It's just me now, Connor here, alone with you. Gabe is on vacation, as I will be soon. I'm going to talk a little more about that in just a few minutes after what I think is a really interesting interview. It's on the topic of being cool. I'm beyond the point of thinking I can still be a cool person. I'm not a cool person, but I think it's still interesting to consider what it actually means to be cool. And part of my interest in that topic, full disclosure here, is because of a Simpsons episode. It was a scene where Homer Simpson and Marge Simpson are in the front of a car. They're driving away from a music festival that Homer Simpson got very involved in and got very famous for a brief period of time. And at the end of which he's like, no, this is not, you know, what I should be doing with my life. I should be with my family. And so Homer turns around and he says, so I realized that being with my family is more important than being cool. At which point Bart says, Dad, what you just said was powerfully uncool. So Homer says, you know what the song says? It's hip to be square. And the reply from the back is, well, that song is so lame. And then Homer says, well, is it so lame that it's cool? And it keeps going and keeps going. Marge chimes in. She's trying to figure out if maybe the way to be cool is to not care about being cool, and then you are cool, and then she finds out that that's actually lame. It goes on and on. You're welcome to look up that short clip on your own. But instead of doing that, you could also just listen to the rest of this, because they never define what cool is in that episode, and we are about to find out exactly what you need to have, no matter where you are on planet Earth, to be considered a cool person.
Science Unscripted.
Hello, my name is Caleb Warren. I am a professor in the marketing department at the Eller College of Management at the University of Arizona. And I'm here to talk about a paper that I published with my co-authors Todd Pizzuti and JJ Chen. And it's on cool people, and it was published in the Journal of Experimental Psychology General.
What is the primary conclusion of your new research on what it means to be cool, Caleb?
We found that there's a similar set of traits, six traits or attributes that are common in cool people and that distinguish cool people from not cool people, as well as people who are just seen as favorable or good, and that these traits are the same everywhere in the world that we sampled.
Let me start there. Everywhere in the world that you sampled, how many countries did you look at?
We looked at 13 different regions in 12 countries. So the United States, Australia, Germany, Spain, Chile, Mexico, South Korea, Hong Kong, mainland China, India, Turkey, and Nigeria.
And throughout all these countries, being cool, being a cool person is more or less the same thing. You have the same kinds of attributes.
Yes, we found remarkably little variation. We started this project trying to explore cultural differences in coolness, and what we found is it's the same six attributes that are common in cool people everywhere we looked.
What are the attributes of being a cool person?
The six that we found are being extroverted, hedonistic, powerful, open, adventurous, and autonomous.
Extroverted, so I like to go talk to people as opposed to just being on my own. Hedonistic, I take part in the pleasures of life. I drink wine. I rock out to music. I have a good time.
Often without much concern for the future.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Powerful, I think we all know. Adventurous is right next to open. And just for clarity, adventurous, I might be a person who loves going on hikes, but I'm not an open person if my friend says, let's go kayaking. And I'm like, no way. The only thing I do is hiking, right?
Yes. So they're slightly different, but I think they're tapping into the same idea. Also autonomous. In all these cases, it's someone who's not afraid to do something different or go against the grain, to seek out new opportunities or ideas or situations.
You need, I'm just looking at this list, you need a couple of these, right? Because if powerful is one example that jumps out at me, powerful, politicians are powerful, but they're not only not cool, they're very uncool a lot of times. They're like the opposite of being cool. So I guess my question is, how many of these six attributes, extroverted, hedonistic, powerful, adventurous, open, autonomous, do I need to have to be a cool person on planet Earth?
That's a hard question to answer. The data I have don't answer that directly. What we see is that on average, cool people have more of all of these traits than not cool people. Moving beyond our specific data, I think just looking at the examples you mentioned, you certainly need some combination of these. I'm not sure exactly what it is. In some of my other work, I think autonomy is really a critical factor, and autonomy, open, adventurous go together. And going back to your example of politicians, one reason politicians aren't cool is because they lack autonomy. They're beholden to voters. And if they don't do what voters want, they get voted out. And so that tends to make them less cool.
Four out of six, though, is that roughly enough? Could you say if I've got four out of six, I'm kind of cool? Or like, is there any way of gauging that?
Yeah, well, you'd certainly be more cool than if you had zero out of six.
How do you figure this out around planet Earth, what cool is?
So in this study, in all my studies, what I do is I ask people, I'll either have them measure a person or a brand on a scale from like not cool to cool. Or in this study, what I did is I used an experiment where I asked people to think of a cool person they know And then I asked other people to think of a not cool person they know, and I looked at the differences between them.
I've got an image of a cool person in my mind. It's a friend of mine. I think he's
great.
Cool. He's
but that's the idea with this study is someone we wanted them to have an image of a cool person they know, a friend of theirs preferably, because we said not famous people. And then we asked them to say, all right, well, is your friend extroverted or introverted? Are they agreeable or disagreeable? Are they traditional or not so? Are they conforming? Are they warm? And we asked about 15 different attributes, including the 6 that we talked about.
I ended up going down a rabbit hole, trying to figure out a question that I wanted to ask, and I can't even really ask it. I was in the Historical Thesaurus of English looking up what the word cool actually means, and what was the word before that? Was it, you know, hip or groovy or smashing or dandy and all these all these other examples? The reason I ask is because cool has a time and a place, that word. And how do you, is that a translatable word and concept into all these other languages that you were doing the research in?
So what's interesting about cool is people have used that word since at least the 1950s and probably earlier with a somewhat similar meaning. Whereas all of these other synonyms that you mentioned, those have gone in and out of fashion, you know, hip, rad, today riz, fire, you know, these have gone in and out of use. And in other languages, like I lived in Italy for a while, they had this word figo, which kind of meant the same thing. I'm not sure if they use it anymore. But what's remarkable about the word cool is it's been used similarly in the United States since at least the 50s. And then as it traveled across the globe, today people in Korea and in Spain and Germany say cool without translating it. So in our studies, we just asked them, we translated all the other words, but we didn't translate cool. We left it as cool and not cool.
Probably the most important question I can ask on behalf of our listeners around the world, how can they become more cool? Obviously, they have the information. I'm gonna read it again. They should be extroverted, hedonistic, powerful, adventurous, open, autonomous. If they're lacking in some of those, if they're like a 2 out of 10 instead of a 5 or a 7 or a 10 out of 10, what can they do?
I would be hesitant to encourage people to try to be more cool. The first problem is if people think you're trying to be cool, it's not going to work. It will backfire. And the other thing is there's other ways. Cool is just one way to earn, you know, respect and esteem in a culture. There are other ways, more pro-social ways, like being a good person, for instance. So I'd be hesitant to encourage people to try to be more cool. Now, the caveat is if you are in an industry or in a pocket of culture, like if you're heavily invested in the art scene or the music scene or maybe in an innovative technology area, then cool might offer more benefits. Focus on these traits related more to being open, adventurous, autonomous. Seek out new possibilities. Take some risks. Don't just follow the rules or the norms.
And that was Caleb Warren talking to me. From the University of Arizona, he was actually talking to us from Massachusetts there about what it means to be cool or the descriptive characteristics of cool people. Do you ever wonder whether or not you're cool? Are you beyond the point of caring what's cool or not? Were you always beyond that point? I think I've been guilty in the past of wanting to be cooler than I actually am. Let us know what you're thinking. su@dw.com. And as I sign off here for the summer, really, I guess that's what I'm about to say here, is I'm signing off for the summer. Gabe is going on a much or well-deserved vacation. I am as well. So for the next coming weeks, especially for our radio listeners out there, you may hear some episodes that you've heard before. We've tried to choose some of the best of that we can possibly offer you over the summer. But I think it's fair to say that in advance. And for all of our listeners out there who are also about to go on vacation, enjoy. Relax, put down the digital device if you can, and do whatever restores you. All the best from Bonn, Germany for now. We'll be back soon.
DW. Made for Minds.